Joe Burke from PopX Cast, a proud member of the Gonna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all of our podcasts at GonnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper, the Starling Tribune. I am the chief editor, SP, and your other reporters for this special episode, number 163 of the Starling Tribune, are Chris.
Who said anything about my back?
And Michelle.
Yeah, they told me about how I get soft and die for you losers. I didn't believe them.
Gotta love some of the partner talk in this episode. Hey, this podcast is recorded on Sunday, August 13th, 2017, and broadcast live from the Starling Tribune headquarters studios via www.geeks.live. Remember, folks, our newspaper is full of spoilers, facts, and speculations about Arrow and, for the heck of it, the rest of the DC TV movie and comic universe.
So guys, tonight we'll be discussing Legends Tomorrow, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the last week that could and may impact future episodes of Arrow, as well as the other CW shows such as The Flash, Supergirl, Legends Tomorrow, Vixen, Constantine, and maybe even Black Lightning. Who knows? There could be news for anything out there.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. If you like our content, why don't you swing by our podcast network home at GoingToGeek.com, where you can find all of our past shows, plus a ton of other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles, all under Going to Geek Productions banner.
Thanks, guys. Now that we got the intro stuff out of the way, let's get right into the content. Michelle, go ahead and break down the current episode of Legends of Tomorrow for us.
Sure thing. This episode is called Fellowship of the Spear. It's season 2, episode 15. It originally aired Tuesday, March 21st, 2017. Directed by Ben Bray. Credits include 1 Supergirl, 1 Legends, 1 Shadowhunters, 1 Arrow, and 1 Lucifer. Writers are Kito Shimizu, who's done 5 Legends, 11 Arrow, 1 Flash, and 7 of The Cape. That is right. If you've ever worked on The Cape, I'm going to mention this all the time. Yeah. And Matthew Mala, who's written 4 Legends.
That's your second Cape reference of the day, by the way, because you recorded an episode earlier today with a writer from The Cape as well.
I wanted it to be so good, and it was so bad. It was so bad.
True, true. Fortunately, I was spared from it, but yes, I do commiserate with those that had to go through it as well. So this is not a podcast about The Cape. It's a podcast about the DC TV and movie universe. Yeah, we'll go ahead and say that. But what we're going to talk about is the ratings for this particular episode of Fellowship of the Spear on the week in March. So we're into March Madness right now. So it's the week after March Madness started. On the 20th of March, Supergirl on Monday, their 16th episode of season 2, and the episode was entitled Star-Crossed. It brought in 2.07 million with a Live Plus DVR rating of 3.50. On Tuesday, the 21st of March, Flash brought in 2.71, so not the juggernaut Flash, but with their 17th episode of the season, their Live Plus DVR brought in 4.59. So that's pretty good there. The episode was titled Duet, by the way. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe that was almost like the Valentine's Day episode that really wasn't a Valentine's Day episode because it was a month late. But anyway. And then on Wednesday, Arrow, the show that we generally podcast about with their 17th episode of the season, brought in a staggering, the series low of 1.38. And a Live Plus DVR of 2.33, and this hurt us because it was Capuchin, and this was the big Anatoly episode, and it should have gotten a heck of a lot more. But moving on back to Tuesday, the 21st of March, The Legends of Tomorrow, that brought in 1.72 on the tail of Flash, is 2.71, and the Live Plus DVR of 2.70. So kind of a lull in the late ends of March, and I would think that this would be ramping up, but guys, there's just probably a lot of people that are watching and paying attention to basketball that time of year.
Yeah, because these DVR ratings, I believe, is 7 days. So if you waited, because this is like almost to the season finale, and sometimes people bunch them up and just sort of marathon them. And of course, this doesn't include app numbers, and who knows how well they do on Netflix, because I have a friend who only watches these shows when they come on Netflix. So who knows how well they do there.
I watched it on Netflix today.
Amazon for me.
Amazon Prime. So guys, we usually talk about the overall plots and themes of the episode. We start with the title, Fellowship of the Spear. I think that was pretty adept. They've been doing pretty good in themed episodes this year, right, Chris?
Yeah, and this was certainly more entertaining than the book it was based off of. Shots fired. Bang, 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 bang.
Wow. Which book are you talking about, though? Are you talking about
Fellowship of the Ring?
Okay.
It's so boring.
Didn't know if you were talking about The Hobbit.
Remember, that's one book out of the whole thing. So do you just not like Fellowship of the Ring? And you're like, I'm okay with the other two, and you're okay with The Hobbit? Or
I never read the other ones because I couldn't get past the first book. So I watched the movies.
And did you like the movies?
Yeah, they're all right.
Did you like the extended cut of the movies?
They were very long. I tried to clean them out when I was cleaning out my Blu-rays because I have not watched them in ages. And I was told I was not allowed to sell them, which was frustrating.
They are good December timeframe movies.
See, that's the Bond-a-thon for me is November-December timeframe. That's when all the James Bond movies are on. I'm like, yeah, spies, explosions. Fair use, you have to stop.
Nobody's going to care about me humming their theme.
Oh, really? Really?
So, Michelle, do you think the Fellowship of the Spear did justice?
As somebody who, I read these books, my father talked about them all the time. It's one of the good things that he did was introduce me to this. And if you're a fan like I am, you got all the little in-jokes and you're just like, well, that's from this and that's from that. Also, if you know about Tolkien's life, he did fight in World War One, and it's been proven that, you know, some of the things that he wrote about, it was inspired by his time because he just absolutely detested war. And his depiction in this was actually pretty good. It's interesting how they've got, like, they got, like, George Lucas kind of right. Now they kind of got Tolkien kind of right. And you know, everything from the way Rip described there, we're on a quest and the end of the world, to the whole hidden writing on the spear after it's exposed to heat, because that's how you find the writing on the One Ring. And it was just nerdy glee for me watching this episode.
And we had the one spear.
To rule them all.
See what I did there?
Mm-hmm.
One spear to bind them.
Bind? You can bind with a spear?
If you stab hard enough.
Yeah, you stab them all and then they're bound together by being impaled by the spear.
You could have like three people stabbed on that spear. It's deep enough that you get three in there.
And then there's also like how the spear has the voices and lures you, because the One Ring also has that, and you're being tempted to use it or not use it. And Amaya was tempted. Okay, I'm going to stop right here.
All right, we'll talk a little bit more about it later, and I do have an important question to ask you in a little bit. So we're going to move on to the fight scenes, because that's what we like about these superhero TV shows. We like all the fights, and although I think they've decreased in quality since the first couple of seasons of Arrow, there are still good fights to see on TV, and we've got quite a few. Michelle, you want to start out with the Battle of the Somme?
Yeah, here's the thing about this episode. This really isn't like the cheery, gung-ho type of fighting that we've had this season. This really is World War One trench warfare. And how they, you know, would advance here and there and the shells. And we get a lot of that in this. So it's not really like colorful gung-ho superhero stuff that we've been used to. This one is very different.
It is. And it puts us right there from the beginning. There's a cold opening that's basically 72 hours into the future, and we see them in the trenches. So you know where it's going. And then the credits play, I believe, and then we're back on the ship. So there was a little bit of a, huh, what's going on? I mean, it's a time travel show, but it was still a little jarring the way they led into it. But that's neither here nor there. They did start out by saying, we're going to be in World War One in the trenches. So there you go. So Chris, the second fight that we saw was the fight in the church with the Nazis? No, Huns, right?
Yes, the Huns. We'll go with that. It was a fight. It reminded me of Indiana Jones, actually, even though it's the wrong time period. I don't know why.
Right. So they were doing this little thing in the church, and Nate steals up, and he's just deflecting bullets like Wonder Woman.
Which is interesting, because this was this not out before Wonder Woman?
It was.
Yeah. Interesting.
Wonder Woman's been deflecting bullets with her gauntlets for decades.
No. I just meant like timeline-wise for the TV/movie comparison and things like that. Because I think that's part of what helped makes it so fresh in people's mind is the Wonder Woman movie with the iconic scene of her going across the open battlefield deflecting bullets. So that's more what I was getting at. I couldn't remember if they were inspired by Wonder Woman movie in that regard or not.
They might have been. I mean, you never know what kind of cross comparison they're doing in Warner Brothers or DC or whatever, but I mean, it could have been. But Michelle's right. She's been deflecting bullets for a while. I was just pointing that out because, well, it was like that. So there you go.
And they do both take place in World War One.
They do indeed.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in the same battlefield though, right?
I do not think so.
No.
Trench warfare in World War One, it wasn't in just one location. It wasn't one battlefield like Civil War was. It was literally north and south along the continent of Europe. So it never was all in one place. Michelle, there was another fight, you know, the advance of the British. It was at the end where they're going to storm the field.
Yeah, this one you got a lot more of like what World War One was like with the shells, and Sarah's there with the Spear of Destiny. It's glowing because it's trying to find the blood, but she's wielding it like a weapon, and Nate's doing his steel thing and such. And Mick's got the heat gun, but it's not like a lot of our, where the heroes are really exposing all their powers. You know, there's no really a firestorm, and Ray shrinks down to mess with the weapon, so it's not like they see a guy in a super suit and everything.
It's one of the few times they're actually very good about trying not to overtly be seen when in a different time period, because they're pretty much doing whatever they need to do to get from one side to the other, not using flashy powers so that there's weird historical record of some guy named Sir Ray of the Palms or anything like that.
Although the ship basically lands in the middle of the battlefield, people see that thing. I mean, it phases in and out of its cloaking device.
That's true.
Anyway, it was a good comprehensive fight scenes, but even on the battlefield, I wasn't even sure if it was the regular people, the actors, or if it was stunt people. It was so fast, you just couldn't tell who was who or if they were actually performing their own stunts. And the cuts were so fast. I am really disappointed in how these fight scenes have degraded since way back season one of Arrow, where we basically saw Daredevil hallway fight scene, and we've talked about it quite a bit. It just keeps on coming back to me every single episode. We're going to move on into some time travel that was in the episode. I do have a time travel question when we get done, but Michelle, you are our time travel expert, so why don't you take us down the places that we went?
So as was mentioned before, we start in 1960 France, World War One, but then there's that whole 72 hours prior, and you see them in the time stream, and then Rip's like, yeah, I know where everybody's hiding. They're hiding in the Vanishing Point. So we actually go back to the Vanishing Point, and it stirs up a lot of feelings for Mick. And then they realize they have to go to World War One, and this takes place in France, the Battle of the Somme. I actually put a link in the show notes about just how awful and bloody this battle is. And there we meet Tolkien, who, you know, was ill, and they have to make sure he's saved, not only so he can write a great set of books, but also so they can use him to find the blood of Christ that Gawain, going back to King Arthur, was supposed to have found and everything. And that's true about Tolkien. He was a huge scholar on King Arthur and everything, inspired a lot of Lord of the Rings. So that was not far-fetched. I actually read a couple of the things that he's written. Not this, because this is apparently something that was never published, and how Nate got a hold of it, we have no clue. But it was interesting, them going back to meet another real world individual.
Mm-hmm. Now, who do you like better as a iconic figure of the past, George Lucas or J.R.R. Tolkien?
Like in the show? How they did it in the show?
Yeah, for the Legends of Tomorrow. How do you like how they brought in, if you want to compare the two iconic figures?
Well, Tolkien is the father of modern fantasy. If you're wondering why somebody has a fantasy book and then everyone's expecting a trilogy, it's Tolkien. If you're wondering why dwarves are short and they mine all the time, Tolkien. If you're wondering why elves are always tall and they got the ears and they're like languid and they live forever, Tolkien. There is like wave after wave of what people call Tolkien-esque fantasy.
Didn't Tolkien actually create the elven language?
Yes. All the languages that are in there, he created himself, and they are real. So if we're going to go, you know, you'd have to say that Tolkien, because he invented this, you know, genre, and Star Wars is space fantasy, I have to go with the egg, and that would be Tolkien.
Chris, do you agree or disagree?
I'm going with George Lucas because I like space fantasy more than I like just regular fantasy. I'm all about the sci-fi flavor of things. So really, it just comes down to, for me, that Star Wars, like the shirt I'm wearing, closer to my heart than the Lord of the Rings and things like that. Now, that being said, I really do enjoy these where they go back in time and play with an iconic figure who's created some work of movie or literature or something like that that has touched millions of people. That's great.
So you are a Harrison Ford fan and not a Sean Austin fan?
Yes.
Okay. Fair enough.
He's Indiana Jones and Han Solo. How do you beat that?
Sean Austin is Rudy, though. Rudy. He was in Goonies. Oh, geez. Taking it down. All right. Well, we also were in the flashback to 72 hours ago, and we went back to the vanishing point, which was interesting. Our heroes have never really thought to go back there until right now, which I question, I guess, a little bit the timing of every. And since we're here, I'm just going to ask the question. So why don't they just go back a few years and find where this thing's been buried on the battlefield rather than having to go through the battle? At the time, they live in a time ship.
Because they needed Tolkien, and Gideon is like, Tolkien is in that area, okay? And that's where it is. So it's one of those things. If they went back and they're like, first off, they have to make sure that he's already written the book. Okay, so let's say they happen to find him and he wrote the book. Then they would have to take him from that particular time and then go to France. So it could actually disturb his linear path from that time. Okay, so here it is. They have the book and it says they need to go to this part of France. And Gideon's like, oh, hey, by the way, Tolkien's actually there in that area where the blood is likely to be at this particular time. Hey, isn't this convenient? Yes, it's World War One, but that's the best time to go because you know where he is and he's in the area, and it probably won't disrupt the time as much as going back a couple of years.
Right. And the more times you stop in time and disrupt things, the more likely you are to screw it up.
Well, they screwed it up in the current time anyway.
Well, they're going to screw it up. That's what happens on Legends of Tomorrow. But you gotta try to at least not go out of your way to make those screw-ups even worse.
I guess. I mean, there's a lot of decisions that need to be made in this episode. So why don't we just go ahead and start our character dissection? We talk about Captain Sarah Lance every week. And so let's go ahead, talk about her, and then go ahead and rate her. So, Michelle, you want to start off on your favorite captain from Legends of Tomorrow?
Sure thing. She actually has a few plans. I like how she gets everybody together and like, hey, you know, how are we going to find this? How are we going to get that last piece of the spear from the Legion of Doom? She actually has a plan. A lot of these plans work. I think it's interesting when she hears, like, we need the blood of Christ. She's like, Gideon, let's, and then Rip's like, no. I know they wanted to use the phrase fixed point in time, but they can't use that phrase because that's Doctor Who. But I do like the fact that she's like, hey, if we got to go back to this particular moment, unfortunately, Nate knows about the whole Gawain thing. She does a pretty good job. You know, she makes plans. They happen. I am disappointed in her. I don't know how you guys feel about this. We've watched Sarah grow and have her own little redemption arc. She's become captain. She's been like this episode plan. It happens and it's great. But she doesn't give Mick the same treatment. Like, it's still, you're Mick. You're a thug. I don't know if I can still trust you. Can we still trust you? And I'm just like, but Sarah, you were an assassin and you died.
Yeah. You're talking about a thief versus an assassin here.
Yeah, that was my main problem the first time around watching this episode. And I watched it with a more of an open mind here. Now, as you go back and you listen to past episodes of Starling Tribune, you'll find me really trying to dissect Mick and how he is proceeding through this season, because I wanted to get to this point in the season and really figure out what was going on with him. Now, I do understand that he's got some things going on with him, but all of a sudden, the crew turns on him, where they were very supportive before. It was like this particular episode was event writing, just because they needed him to betray the rest of the crew, and it was totally out of place for the rest of the season. Still, to me, this time around, I did understand more of what happened in the episode, but it still made me go, huh, this makes no sense to how we got here, because he was part of the crew. He was their family, and all of a sudden they're turning on him. So it's more of the rest of the crew that I'm concerned about rather than him, because he turns on in 30 minutes. All of a sudden he is anti them and he is pro partners, which I guess has always been there, but even his partner died to save the crew. That's, gosh, it's just so catch-22-ish here. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
I tend to agree with you. It seemed awful convenient that now all of a sudden everyone's kind of just like, psh, Mick, you're a moron. We don't care about anything. Whereas before, there'd kind of been some effort towards, yeah, Mick's kind of rough around the edges, but think back to like Ray and Mick at the beginning of this season where they're buddies and pals and he's trying to be the new snart. Or was that the end of last season when they partnered up? But still, I feel like it was more for the purposes of plot than anything else. There hadn't been a ton of foreshadowing that the Legends don't trust Mick at all. I think they trusted him to play his role in things.
I think there was more foreshadowing of Amaya with the spear than there was of Mick and this betrayal.
Yes.
But I don't see it as a betrayal, because Stein knew that Mick had that implant and all that type of stuff going on. And he did remind everybody that he was Kronos when they got, you know, ripped with the whole brain thing. And for them to just go and just, you know, he did not rat on them on purpose. He has been going through some stuff. And they went to the vanishing point and he already had Snart on his brain. And then he really thought Snart was not in, you know, he's like, I thought he was a hallucination. And it's not like he could have actually gone with Snart then. He could have just abandoned the team and gone with Snart after he was punched, but he didn't. He came back and he owned up to it. And then they just, instead of, you know, they took back Rip. Rip killed Sarah. And they're like, oh, that's okay. You weren't yourself or anything. But now they're treating Mick this way. And it's like, what?
Like I said, it's more the crew than it is Mick itself. Mick does make a decision based on that it's rather abrupt, though. But I don't know. It is what it is. And we'll get to the end of the season here and go from there. But to get back to where this came from, Sarah Lance, she is the head of it. She's like, not now, Mick. And she blames Mick. So, yeah, I agree. She's partly or mostly responsible for what happens at the end here. And I think that knocks her down from her captaincy for the episode. So with that in mind, we rate Captain Lance on a scale of 1 to 10 every week, where 1 is bad and 10 is awesome. And so, Chris, where would you rate the fair Captain Lance for this episode?
6. The Mick issue's very much on her, because there's a point in there where she point blank interrupts him when he's trying to chime in. Not now, Mick, things like that. And then kind of reckless, wanting to go back in time to the time of Christ to go and redo everything. I like how Rip kind of stepped in. I was like, this is one of those points you never go to, which also conveniently keeps them from going to a point in time that would be contentious to show on TV.
Yep, that's true, Michelle.
Many of you might be surprised at the number I'm going to say, but it's a 4. She does all these great plans. Yes, she's a little reckless about the crucifixion, but she does listen. And it's like, okay, fine. And she listens to Nate and she makes these great plans and, you know, break up the team here. But she dismisses Mick, and of all the people, you know, she's trusting Rip Hunter again. And it's like, no. Yeah, I think, you know, part of this is on the writers where they made her be this way, but she should not have been so dismissive of Mick and just so flippant in everything. So a 4.
That's fair.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and blame the writers for the most part here. And I think her performance was fine. And I think the decisions she made was just based on plot and plot alone. But I will agree, Michelle, that's actually the same number I was going to give, is a 4. And I'm hopeful that it will continue to rise as we go through the last couple of episodes in the season. But yeah, this one was a hard one to take all the way around. This episode could have been so good if they foreshadowed stuff a little bit better, if the writers and the producers throughout the season, and if they wrote this episode a little bit better. It was effects heavy, so maybe they spent a lot of their budget on effects more than anything else, or maybe they were getting ready for the final. I don't know, but this could have been pulled off better than it was. Okay, let's move on. We talked about Mick. Let's talk about Ray and the Atom, because he really didn't have too much to do in this episode. Right, Chris?
He really didn't do a whole much. I mean, they didn't treat Mick right at the end, which was kind of nice, because remember, he's one of the ones that was kind of all buddy and pal with Mick near the end of, of season one, and he's also just as guilty as dismissing him and not really valuing his opinion, trusting him, anything like that. And I like that he's the one that realizes it.
The moment that stands out for me for Stein moving along here is when he says he doesn't want Mick to hurt him, but he went through the entire thing with Mick before and figured out exactly what was going on with Mick. He just didn't seem like he wanted to help Mick this time around. He was just trying to save his own hide, which I think is a little out of character for him at this point, but that's just me. Michelle, what do you think about Stein?
Yeah, that came out of nowhere. You know, he's been there with them, like when Mick was a zombie, and then, you know, with the surgery and such. And I really thought that he had come to this understanding. And I really don't like it when they use Stein sometimes as like the grumpy old man figure. You know, like last episode, he, you know, admits to Jackson, like he has these moments of growth with Jackson and everything. And then for some reason, they make him be the uptight, grumpy old guy, and it's just frustrating that they're not consistent.
Well, maybe he just didn't have his Metamucil that morning and was cranky.
Talking about cool food items that may or may not be on the Wave Rider, and we've been pretty dark so far, let's talk about some cool jelly beans.
That was pretty cool, actually.
What's your favorite candy? Jelly beans. There you go. There's a pile of them.
So, okay, look, I get that it's interesting that he can break down the atomic structure of the thingy to make something else, but I don't understand how can you just make it jelly beans when you don't know the atomic structure of jelly beans. I understand being able to change it to water because water is H2O. It's a polar molecule. Like you can actually picture the chemical composition of water. How can he just do that whole transmutation thing? Like, is it literally like I wish for jelly beans and that's it?
Well, he's been working on it with Gray.
Yeah.
While we haven't seen anything. I mean, it was a convenient way to be like, hey, well, I know we haven't touched on this in almost a season on our transmutation of matter or whatnot, but we'll justify it by being like, hey, we did all this work off screen to be able to do it. And now it's just like, oh, you need us to do that? No problem. It's easy. We'll do it like that.
See, that's, again, another thing that could have been worked into the season is the training of individuals into various things. And transmutation for Firestorm could have been something that they worked into and did not. But this was definitely setting up something that happened later. And it's something that happened earlier in the season as well with the crossover. So it's not like they have never done it. It's just few and far between.
Exactly.
And I think it's a little bit of a budget CGI sort of thing there. So we have Nate. And Nate, guys, I just didn't see any progression of Nate's character other than he was the resident historian. So he kind of knew stuff here, but he didn't really progress as his character and his relationship with Maya or anything. It was just, it was static this week for him.
Well, he got to have a bad accent.
He did indeed. Amaya, though, there was a lot that led up for Amaya and her use of the spear and wanting to change the destiny of her family, basically. And I think that was well done. That was probably the thing that was the most well done out of the entire episode.
Yeah, she even tells Sarah that that's the plan that they should do. You know, we have the spear. Let's use it. Let's change everything. Don't worry. I know what to do. This is the way we should go.
But does she really? Because Rip makes a point of saying once the spear fragments are reunited, it's basically going to be whispering in the back of your head your deepest, darkest desires to make you use it. So while she's confident that she can make it work because she makes the totem work and things like that, is that really her thinking it? Is the spear playing with her mind a little bit? I mean, we see the same thing with Mick a little bit. He's also hearing the spear whisper to him. So I kind of agree with Sarah's plan there not to use the spear because it's way too dangerous to see whether anyone can control it.
Yeah, she's the Boromir. Okay, so for those of you, here I go again. In the original Fellowship, the dude played by Sean Bean, you know, one does not simply walk into Mordor, that guy. He wants to take the ring and he's like, we need to defend Gondor because Gondor's on the front lines. It's like, you do not see this every single day. We have Gondor. We need it. We know how to use it. We will use it right. And he actually contemplates taking it. And that's why he ends up, a spoiler alert, dying. But in this case, you know, Amaya gets tempted. She holds it, but she actually does, you know, give it back. Boromir does give it back. He does, you know, redeem himself before he dies. But that's Amaya's role in this episode.
So it's interesting that you bring up Sean Bean, because every time I think of him, I don't necessarily think of him in the context of Lord of the Rings. I actually think of him as Boromir in context of The Martian and the conference that they have in The Martian. And he's a part of that one as well. So that's just my Sean Bean.
And that's one he doesn't actually die in, too.
No, he gets fired, but yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't die, though, because he dies in a lot of his other movies.
In every single other movie, he dies. Absolutely. So, guys, you got the Spear of Destiny. I'm just going to ask you this. What would you do with it, Chris?
I don't know. I don't want to think about it.
Okay. Michelle, do you have something off the top of your head? Because I have something.
2016 would have gone a lot better.
Okay. Real world politics. Okay. So what my use of the Spear of Destiny would be to completely change season 4 of Arrow.
Fair.
Okay.
There you go. All right. So Rip Hunter is fitting in with the crew here. I mean, he's saying some nice things, but he's deferring to Sarah. I think he had an okay episode here. Nothing remarkable either way, but at least he's starting to fit in with the team again.
Deferring except on one point where she's like, Gideon, go back to the crucifixion. He's out of his seat before she even finishes. No, Gideon, you will not do that.
And I think that sets up what we're about to see in season three, too, as well, because he knows stuff about the way he wants the time stream shaped and defended. And she's more of a cowboy with the power at the tips of her hand sort of thing. So we'll see what happens in season three. But good point there. Good point. We can't go an episode without mentioning Amy Pemberton, can we, Michelle?
Okay, you can't go an episode without mentioning...
You're the one who put Gideon in the show notes. If you're going to put Gideon in the show notes, I'm going to mention Amy.
That's called a setup, son.
Yeah. Yeah, good old Gideon, knower of things, healer of people.
Amazing. Ship's doctor. She's the emergency holographic medical program, basically, for the Wayrider.
Maybe that's what they need to do next season, because in Star Trek Voyager, the doctor was a hologram, and then, like, for many seasons, he was only confined to the medbay, but then they invented a thingamabob to where he could actually be a walking, like, hologram throughout the ship. So maybe that's what they need to do. They need to actually make a holographic version of Gideon, so that way, you know, SP can see Amy every single week.
There's nothing wrong with seeing Amy. Amy's cool, isn't she, Chris?
I agree. Much like Sarah, I was like, I did not imagine that's what Gideon looked like.
didn't think of that. Now I have a Gideon crush. Go figure. All right. So we did have a full-blown Legion of Doom in this episode. And Eobard Thong screwed up as usual. Damien Dark, he was coming in with the, we need to change things up. We need to make things better. So that's good. And then Malcolm comes in at the end. Scratching my head why they didn't use him throughout the entire episode, but I guess he's going off to get the book. Guess what? We have two new members, Snart and Rory.
Well, obviously, I don't think we're going to see it stick because we know he's in season three. Full disclosure, guys, I'm just watching these shows as we go. I haven't seen anything past this point, but I'm relatively confident he's going to become part of the team again. And you kind of get that seed planted when he's looking at Snart. He goes, I thought the spear was just for us, to that effect. So while he's a part of the team, I don't see it being long-term. Same with Snart, because he has to get back out of the time stream so he can become the Snart we know. But sure was fun.
When he and Amaya are talking about what they hear, Mick says, I hear my parents telling me not to play with fire. And he actually says, there are things that I want to change too. So he actually wants to make himself better.
Right. I mean, his motivation for the spear, I don't think, has unlimited power to do whatever he wants. As they've been hinting at for a while, it's his unresolved issues with his partner's death. He wants to use the spear to bring back his friend, to bring back his partner, and then I'm sure they would use it for some kind of ridiculousness afterwards, potentially, but his primary motivation isn't power, it's to save his friend. And I think that says something about Rory.
So I'm sensing a consensus here on the episode as a whole that it was okay, maybe, but not the best, and it could have been done better. And I guess this goes back to this time last year when supposedly they had a plan. Well, they had a plan for the season, but they didn't have a plan for this episode, and I think it showed. What do you think, Michelle?
Yeah, it's part of the thing that, you know, we've talked about with Arrow and such, is that you get together and you say you make this plan, you should be able to make plans and say, this is how these characters are going to grow, so we can make sure that they are consistent, and here's the spike of when they're growing this way, and here's the spike of when they're going to go that way. So this way we don't get out of the blue moments and we're just sitting here confused and wondering why the entire team, you know, like, this is near the end of season two, so they've spent two seasons together. It's like, why they all of a sudden would just turn and just dump on Meg.
This was a filler episode is how I looked at it, to bridge the gap as we got to the penultimate episode for this season, which is bad guys got the spear, bad stuff's going to go down.
And that's tough that Tolkien was just a filler episode. This could have been so much more, but it wasn't. Well, any last words about the episode, guys? Or are we ready to move on?
Snart is fun.
All right, Michelle, why don't you tease us in what we're going to be watching next week?
Yes, next episode is Doom World. Season 2, episode 16. It aired Tuesday, March 28th, 2017. The Legion of Doom rewrites history after obtaining the Spear of Destiny, potentially changing the legends forever. Director Marzi Almas, writers Ray Utartachit and Sarah Hernandez.
Looking forward to next week. All right, guys, it's time to go back to the news desk. Live from the Starling Tribune main news desk, we're going to be talking about some Arrow news first up. And Michelle, we have a upcoming novel from Mark Guggenheim.
Yes, the CW's Arrow is set to get a tie-in novel from showrunner Mark Guggenheim and author James R. Tuck. Guggenheim announced the novel titled Arrow: Fatal Legacies on Twitter on Saturday afternoon after an Amazon listing was spotted. The book will be published by Titan Books and will hit shelves on January 30th, 2018. The story will help to bridge the gap between the show's fifth and sixth seasons. The synopsis of the novel teases a deeper exploration of Chase's plans on Leon Yu. And the synopsis is, the untold story bridging between Arrow seasons 5 and 6, exclusive to this novel. In the devastating aftermath of season 5, Team Arrow must resume their mission to protect Star City. Those who have survived Chase's trap on Leon Yu discover that his plans did not end there. If his legacies aren't stopped, countless more will die.
Bum, bum, bum.
So I really hope that this stays canon, unlike the other Arrow book that I just bought like 2 months ago, and then the next day it comes out. Oh no, it's not canon. That was all about Slade. So please, please make this stay canon so I don't restart a book like, oh, this is fun. I'm like, oh, it's not canon. And while that doesn't change my enjoyment, kind of changes how it factors into things.
Well, we did have a between series book, the Arrow 2.5 comic, trade paperback, whatever.
Right, and that is canon.
That was pretty good. It explained a lot of things, like where the suits originally came from before they went down that path on the screen, and also what happened to the Queen Mansion. So that is all important stuff that came out of the 2.5 book, and thank you very much, Neil, our former reporter, for bringing that to our attention, and we reported on that way back when. And so I will be looking forward to picking this one up and seeing what is between the covers. Now, Chris, you have some news about your favorite character on Arrow, Slade.
That's right. They did an interview over on TV Line, and they got some information, or rather were asked, do you have anything new to share about Arrow's Slade sticking around? And according to Mike Osiello there, he says, it appears Oliver will make good on his offer to his frenemy and trade for his help against Adrian Chase, seeing as the CW series is currently seeking an Aussie lad to fill the guest starring role of a, quote, introverted, moody, and naturally athletic teenager. So, we might, well, presumably we'll have Slade hanging around for at least the first half of the season, I'm guessing. And I love it.
Yeah. You know what I'm going to love? If the Huntress returns. So, do you think that the Huntress is going to return?
Oh, I hope so. Speaking to Comic Book Resources, executive producer Mark Guggenheim has this response when asked about DeGaulle's potential return. I want to say, absolutely, Jessica DeGaulle has expressed an absolute willingness to come back. Jessica's a favorite actor of mine, and the Huntress is a favorite character of mine. I want to make it happen in season 6. We've got some plans for the later half of the year that I think she would fit into really well, so we'll see. Make this happen. I've been wanting Huntress to come back since the moment you made her leave. So I really, really want this to happen.
Indeed. I think we all do, Chris, right?
Oh, yeah. I think it'd be fun.
Mm-hmm. So another character whose future is vastly up to debate based on the finale of season 5 is John Barrowman. And so what do you got on that, Chris?
So this is an interesting two-part news story. On the 11th, there was a story where Arrow's EP Mark Guggenheim came out and discussed the possibility of John Barrowman's return, and he said, that's up to John. We told John when we called him to tell him about the events of the finale, every single person on the show has come back in some way, shape, or form. We've got flashbacks, we've got time travel, we've got parallel universes. Goodbye is never goodbye. He has an open invitation to return to the show anytime he wants. So as the fans, we're all like, yes, that's awesome. So what happened? What did John Barrowman think about it? Well, he talked about it on his Instagram. It appears he's very willing to return. He took to Instagram to address the rumors, saying, I am surprised and very happy to hear Mark Guggenheim's comments about Merlin's future in the Arrowverse, Barrowman explained. because in a very decisive phone conversation we had with Wendy Miracle, I was led to believe that there was no plans to bring Merlin back. That being said, he's totally on board with coming back as Malcolm Merlin, and while it might not be a Malcolm Merlin who still lives in the present day, like they said earlier, plenty of opportunities for weird flashbacks or for time-traveling events. I'd want to see it.
Yeah, he's searching for a home right now, so we'll see what happens with that.
Look, John Barrowman is a national treasure. He just posted some pictures from a con he did this weekend. And no, I'm not really into spending a lot of money just on like celebrity autographs and stuff like that. But he is one that if I could, and he's going to a con that I'm going to, I will give him my money because he takes the best pictures. He's okay if you touch him. He's okay if he touches you. It's just, it just seems like it would be an amazing experience to have a meeting with John Barrowman.
I think cons for him are like playgrounds are for kids. He just loves to go out and have some fun and meet people. It's just who he is and what he does. So, yeah, I was saying not that people don't like him. I was saying he is searching for a new role at this point in time because right now, both the Doctor Who and the Flareverse have kind of written him out, at least the way it was ended in season 5 of Arrow. So we'll see what happens to him in the future. He's a very important character. I can't imagine the CW not wanting to bring him back. Over on Doctor Who, he's basically been written out unless they try to bring him back at some point in time as Captain Jack. So we'll see what happens there. That's all I was saying is I'm betting that he's going to have great things happen to him in the future. It's just a question of where are they going to happen. All right, moving on with general DC news. We have some news on Vixen, basically.
Yes, so the issue is, will Kuasa crossing paths with Rey on Vixen be addressed on Legends of Tomorrow? So those of you who have watched the animated Vixen on CW Seed, I recommend it. It's really great. Kuasa was in season 2, so now there's this whole thing about, like, does the Vixen animated series have anything to do with the rest of the Flareverse? Well, Rey's knowledge of Kuasa may help the Legends version of Vixen. EP Mark Guggenheim says, if you go back and look at Vixen season 2, I wouldn't exactly call her fighting alongside Rey. She's always been morally questionable, but I think that's what makes it interesting as far as Amaya is concerned, is that Rey, at the appropriate moment, will accurately tell her that there are moments where Kuasa was capable of selfless good, so I think that gives Amaya a little bit of hope.
Okay, well, we'll see what's going on in the future of the Vixen characters, I guess, really. Okay, I think that's it for the news this week. Kind of a light week. We're looking forward to con season picking up and more tidbits being given to us by actors and producers alike, as filming has commenced for all of these series. All right. If you want to hear more about great stuff like the DC TV universe, the Marvel TV universe, just general geeky stuff, an intense look at the geek culture, you can check that out at our network home at GunnaGeek.com. Right, Chris?
That's right. We are a part of the Gunna Geek Network. There's a variety of geeky and nerdy podcasts there, some of which focus on specific TV shows such as Flash and Arrow, some of which focus on video gaming, some of which are just about general geek culture. But there's all sorts of different stuff, and each week we try to highlight one specific show, tell you a little bit about it, and maybe, just maybe, entice you to go check it out. So this week we want to talk about episode 39 of the In Defense Of cast, entitled Space for Everyone. Joined by writer Ty Gooden, we discuss diversity in science fiction across all media. So if that sounds like something interesting to you, head on over to GunnaGeekNetwork.com. Click on the In Defense Of logo, and it'll take you to the entire back catalog, including episode 39. But guys, I think that is going to wrap us up this week. A big thank you to everyone who did listen or watch live and participate in the chat at geeks.live. Also, thank you to anyone who downloads and listens at a later date. Don't forget, you can find all of the replays on Spreaker, YouTube, on our website, all of those things.
And remember, you can always catch us live as we record at www.geeks.live at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Sundays as we ramp up for the new Flareverse year, including the 6th season of CW's Arrow.
You can find all of our contact information on the Gunna Geek Network at gunnageeknetwork.com. where you can check out our forums and other shows. If you want to share your thoughts, head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. That's another great episode, guys. And we're wrapped up for another week. Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag not now, Mick.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag Captain Cold.
And I am at Michelle Ely, signing off with hashtag I don't blame Mick. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.